Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Tonight podcast. I'm Ben Kay, and with me tonight, ahead of an exciting weekend of European rugby, is three times Champions Cup winner Brian O'Driscoll. We'll also have a very exciting special guest joining us later, former Munster man Peter Stringer, who, like me, has got two Champions Cup trophies under his belt. This weekend, European action is back with the semi-finals, as four must become two in both the Champions and Challenge Cup. Tonight, we'll be discussing the force of the Irish and all of the upcoming games, as well as the big news from the week. In Champions Cup honour, we'll be hearing exclusively from Munster's Conor Murray, one of the world's best nines, my opinion, the best nine in the world at the moment. He's going to be discussing the hopeful journey to this year's final after last year's defeat and how he's learned from fellow Irishman Ronan O'Gara.
You learn an awful lot more from your defeats than you do your wins, so hopefully this weekend we can kind of put those little lessons into practice and go one more.
As well as that, we'll also hear Connor's opposition this week, New Zealand legend and Racing 92's Dan Carter.
You know, hopefully, you know, we can turn up and put one back on them this weekend, but it's going to take a huge effort.
So, Brian, the biggest competition in Northern Hemisphere rugby from a club or province perspective is heading into semi-final stages this weekend. And being an Irishman, you must be absolutely delighted to see two Irish provinces in there. Are there going to be two Irish provinces playing in the final in Bilbao?
Potentially. We had two Irish provinces in the semi-finals this time last year and no Irish team in the final. So I think what you do get in this, what was the fourth year now of the refined Champions Cup, where it's been reduced from 24 to 20 teams, I think the quality and the depth of teams getting to the knockout stages is vastly improved. I think in the past, you've seen sides that maybe you wouldn't have considered to be semi-final type quality teams finding their way, eking their way into semi-finals. I think that's not the case anymore with the newer version of the competition. I think you look at the quality of what the Scarlets have delivered, you know, losing their first two games of the tournament, I think almost year on year, and certainly over the last seven or eight, Leinster, Munster, one or other team have been competitive and getting into, you know, knockout stages, quarterfinals, semi-finals. And then you've got Racing, who found themselves in a final a couple of years ago in Dan Carter's first year, only to fall at that final hurdle. So I think we've got some mouth-watering ties this weekend, with our own game being the Racing 92 Munster game down in Bordeaux. But I think you could easily have a non-Irish final, but, you know, the hope is at home. You know, the year that we've had, that maybe could we piggyback on the Grand Slam and have that dream final of Munster-Leinster. There's such a huge rivalry at home between the two provinces.
There's, as you said, massive rivalry, but there's also a lot of success around Irish rugby at the moment. I don't want to harp back to the Grand Slam, I'm sure you do. But after that Grand Slam, we talked, I think, on the podcast about the fact that those Irish provinces doing well in Europe and then going into a Six Nations, it helps Ireland if your provinces are doing well. And we mentioned that Saracens had for them, a bit of a ropey pre-Six Nations time. They lost six on the bounce in the lead-up to the Six Nations. They had a lot of England players in there. Maybe that was part of the reason why England weren't firing, because the spine of your team were on a bit of a confidence dip. Off the back of the Grand Slam now, is that really helping both those provinces are first and second in their respective pools in the Pro 14?
Undoubtedly. I think if you look at that Saracens team over the last 2 years, you know, you had a Grand Slam winning team 2 years ago. you know, Saracens went and won the Champions Cup for the first time. Then the England won the championship, albeit losing the Grand Slam on the final day against Ireland. But then Saracens, with the spine of that England team, still went on to achieve European success as well. So I think undoubtedly having a core group of players playing well in that period of Six Nations to bring that energy and that excitement back into the knockout stages has a huge positive impact. And you're seeing it, you saw it in the Leinster performance, even though those players wouldn't have played together since back in January. They didn't play, you know, the week immediately after Six Nations. They were decided to be rested rather than try and get the cohesion together. It was kind of a couple of tough training weeks under Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen, but they delivered on match day against Saracens, and they had to. And then Munster probably rode their luck a little bit, but they never know when they're beaten. And I think, you know, the likes of Peter O'Mahony and Stander, and, you know, I know CJ Stander's the first trophy he's ever won of any great, you know, magnitude or substance. So to win a Grand Slam, what's that going to do for your confidence levels? Absolutely sky high. And if you can inject that back into your provincial setup, I think everyone can feed off it.
Who's got the tougher tie out of the two of them? That's probably wrong. But in terms of their own playing styles, does that match up well to the opposition they've got? I think it does.
I think they're, you know, tactically it'll be quite similar. You know, Leinster and Scarlets, I think both teams like to play. I think Leinster play a version of what Ireland do, but I think they're less prescriptive. I think they play a little bit more heads up. Yes, there's certain plays and, you know, in that playbook that they go to try and set up, but I think they look as though, certainly from the outside, they look as though they play with a bit more freedom to be able to counter what the launch play might have been or what the setup play might have been, to then be able to react to scenarios that unfold.
But Racing have got a huge old pack, so you'd think there'd be a discussion at least over the last couple of weeks in Munster's headquarters about, do we need to run that forward pack around a little bit more than we would maybe if we were playing another team? And is that a bit of a gamble if you do that, to go away from your strengths?
Yeah, I think it is. I think if you look into the Munster teams that have had success, their core is a bit like the Leicester teams that have had success. Their core is that they've a big, you know, gnarly pack that really like going, maybe gnarly not being the perfect word to choose, but a big, aggressive, set-piece orientated pack that gives their backs the front football that they're able to thrive on. And Munster, you know, if you compare the successful, the Heineken Cup winning Munster teams versus this team, are they at that level? I don't think so. But in certain positions, I think you look at the back row with the likes of Stander and Peter O'Mahony at half-back with Conor Murray, with, you know, key players like Keith Earls, who's miraculously come back from injury after going off in the final 10 minutes of the Ireland-England Grand Slam game. He wasn't expected back. So seeing a player like that back in the setup, back involved and up for selection is a huge plus for them. But they're going to need there's no doubt they're going to need a big performance up front to lay a platform and to make sure that Dan Carter also doesn't have the platform that he thrives on. He was the difference in the semi-final against Claremont. Yes, they might have been in the lead when he came on, but he was the one that created the Mark Andrews scored, and then his break led to that final try that ultimately put Claremont out of the competition. So yeah, there's a bit of focusing on your own game, but also trying to make sure that you stop the opposition's front football.
Okay, well, the Leinster game against the Scarlets is on Saturday at 3:30, but our big game is Racing 92 against Munster, and you can get all the action live on Sunday from 2:30 PM, BT Sport 3. I think it's probably a good time now to introduce our special guest ahead of this mammoth European weekend, former Munster man Peter Stringer. Strings, good to see you, looking fit and healthy as ever.
Cheers, lads.
What are you up to at the moment? Are you
back in Ireland at the moment, just enjoying a bit of family time and just relaxing, doing a bit of training and enjoying that kind of freedom away from a schedule of a 7-day week.
But the boots
nice.
Not hung up yet?
No, not yet. Just weighing up my options at the moment and we'll see where it takes me. Just a couple of weeks to make a decision and see what to do.
Well, it's good to see you. You're probably best placed to talk about Munster. With what, 15 years were you at Munster?
Yeah, 15 years. Yeah.
And you're obviously back there now. You can hear the crowd. You can hear what everyone's talking about. What's the feeling around the area as to Munster's chances?
Yeah, there's a real kind of a real buzz, a real atmosphere. I think that I haven't been around in a few years, but in chatting to the guys and chatting to just the general perception with the public is, you know, there's something building. I think the last couple of years, Munster have been there, thereabouts, but just missing that kind of, just being that finished article. But I think this year, in looking at a lot of the games they've played and being behind in games, there seems to be a real composure there and a real kind of structure that they're sticking to, and it's working for them. So it's, I think, like I said, the public are getting excited about it again, which I think is great for the province. And a semi-final, it's just great to be back at that stage. And I think there's a real optimism to get to a final again.
Did you personally find it difficult the first few years after leaving Munster, watching them and not being part of it?
Oh, yeah, it was horrible. you go away, and I suppose I left under circumstances where you're fourth choice scrum half, and in a place that you've been a regular starter for 15 years, and it's very, very difficult. And as good as the place is, and as much as I didn't want to leave, for my own sanity and for my own rugby well-being, I had to get out of there and had to, you know, look for opportunities to get on the field. And, you know, ultimately I wasn't finished playing, and, you know, it was always difficult watching, you know, see them getting to the different stages and leaving that kind of that hub and that atmosphere that I'd grown up with, and you know, it's where you're from and you know what it's like, and, you know, playing for the people where you've grown up. So it's, yeah, it's very difficult. And, you know, you're slowly kind of coming around to being, you know, a fan again and going to the games and being part of that kind of atmosphere. And I think,
and are you there now?
Yeah, no, you are absolutely. And I think in many ways the passing of Anthony Foley was a thing that, you know, brought many of guys together, the past players with the current squad. You know, you didn't really have any connection with them, you didn't really kind of have any kind of reason to kind of hang out and chat with them. And that was a funny kind of a situation where, under kind of very, very sad circumstances, that brought two groups of people together. You know, on that day when Munster played Glasgow, the day after Anthony's funeral, was something that I've never experienced as a player on the field or someone watching a game in the stands. The atmosphere and just being in the ground that day, you know, you felt like you were kind of part of it again. Mm. So
that your famous red number 9 shirt, it was synonymous with you, very recognisable player, obviously at the heartbeat of that really successful period for Munster. But there's another Munster number 9 now who's doing great guns. A lot of people talking about him as potentially the best scrum half in the world at the moment. How important is he to the current crop, looking back of those big characters that were so important for your
time?
Yeah,
he's, you know, he's the key guy there. You look at the kind of the pivotal positions, and you look at 9 and 10, and you look at your captain, and, you know, he's up there. I think, you know, when he plays and he plays well, then Munster tick. I think you look at it last week and in South Africa, you know, Munster were struggling, they were behind, and, you know, Connor comes on and, you know, to be fair, he had an incredible game. And just, I think the composure that he has, he just looks like he's got so much time on the ball in his decision making and his control. And, you know, he's coming out of the 22, or, you know, he just knows what to do, and it's all very, very structured. I think there was no panic, and I think when he came on, you know, he scores his try and, you know, he settled things down, and they stuck to a plan. They didn't try and do anything kind of off script, and nothing, you know, there was no panic kind of set in. So he was very much the controller of that, and obviously his kick at the end of the game, you know, sealed it. But yeah, from a point of view of, you know, when you, I suppose when the guys see him on the field, you know, it makes, I think, everyone's job a lot easier.
This just looking at comparing the last year semi-finalists team that the Munster got through, it looked as though they got through on emotion, and I think they were probably shown up in the semi-final, the gulf in calibre and class between them and Saracens. I get the feeling this year, though, that's gone. Now it's not a team having to rely on a big moment in a season to inspire them. They look very well drilled. They look as though they've got a very clear way they're playing. And they've got players at the peak of their powers. You've got players like Peter O'Mahony and Stander and Keith Earls all really playing the best rugby of their lives. It is, you know, by Munster standards, it's now about winning silverware. It's not about getting to finals anymore, because there's been a few barren years by Munster standards, which is crazy. Still getting to semi-finals, but not winning trophies. Is this the crop now to break that mold and create another legacy, another generation, or another period of time where you're going to see, you know, some concerted success?
Well, as a Munster man, you'd like to think so. I think, like you mentioned, in the last couple of years, you had those kind of moments. Like you said, you rely on that kind of passion. But now you're at a stage when you're playing big French teams, you got to have more than just passion. You got to have kind of the intelligence behind it to have a game plan. You got to have those guys who are able to implement that game plan. I think to be fair, Gerry Flannery and Felix Jones are two outstanding guys that have been, I suppose, in that setup, seeing the transition of, you know, Anthony, Razi Erasmus, and now Johan van Graan. And they've been the guys who have probably put a lot of the structure on it. A lot of these kind of coaches have come in and overseen that and implemented their own kind of little ideas. But I think those two guys have put something in place and have instilled something within the squad that I think is really, really special. And I think you spoke about it, that it's an opportunity for these guys to push on to the next level. And I think they have to. I think, semi-final, going down to France, and it's by no means a home game for Racing at the weekend. And it's an opportunity that Munster certainly won't shy away from. You know, haven't played them a number of times in the last couple of years and won more games than lost against them. So, yeah, it's an opportunity for them. They will, I think, be very, very confident going down there. I don't see any reason why, they won't win the game. And then, a final, anything can happen, and it's probably a final we're all kind of wishing for as a Munster-Leinster final.
Well, you say that, so I've got a question for both of you, actually, because I guess it depends. There's both sides of it. If your team loses, do you want the other team to get into the final? If your team wins, do you want the other two team to get in? Because Northampton-Leicester, for example, the rivalry of those two teams, actually, most Leicester people probably wouldn't want Northampton to do very well, regardless of who they were playing, whether they were playing a foreign team or not, and vice versa, I imagine. So is that rivalry the same with your provinces?
I'd say a few years ago, there was no way if Leinster lost, I would have wanted Munster to go through to the final. But I think maybe you soften a small bit. And I think I've probably learned to champion, as much as I'm still biased towards my old club, I think you still want to champion the Irish teams when they're going well. And in the event that Leinster lost on Friday or Saturday, would I want Munster to go through? I would, because I think Irish rugby is on a high, and I think it can really explode from there and continue that momentum that the Irish team has shown from the Six Nations going into Australia. What I would say is that Leinster wouldn't want, if you had to pick your semi or final,
the players,
I think
wouldn't want to be
that playing. They would like Racing.
Yeah.
Because there's an equaliser, aspects to having one of the provincial teams.
Yeah.
You know each other so well individually, but play each other quite regularly. And you do, from a Leinster perspective, you know that history counts for a lot, and you know that they will never give up. Whereas there is a sense that if you can get momentum against a French opposition team, that maybe I wouldn't say they'll capitulate, but they mightn't come back at you like a Munster would. And irrespective of form going into that final, if Leinster kill it in the semi and Munster fall into the final, I would be so fearful, because the thought from a fan's perspective of losing to your arch rival is unthinkable, particularly in a final.
I agree. I think when you're playing for Munster, and I think, like we spoke about earlier, the prospect of Leinster being in a final, if you didn't get there as a player, it's the last thing you would have wanted. But I can see from your point of view now, when we're away and I've been in the UK and you're watching the Irish team and you see how well Leinster have done. I would like to see them in the final if Munster don't get there. And I think you spoke about the final. If it is the two of them, whatever about tactics and I suppose planning going into a game like that, the physicality, first and foremost is the thing that will dictate the game. And it's how your key players then will kind of control the other elements and how you kind of handle the pressure on the day, because there's no pressure like it when you play against the other provinces. And like the fact you said, guys so well, what they do, and the sheer emotion that's involved is incredible. And it's how you kind of, I suppose, manipulate those kind of key moments in the games that will have a huge bearing on it.
All Right, as promised, we can now hear from Munster scrum half Conor Murray as he talks of his hopes of reaching the Champions Cup final after last year's heartbreak.
So, Conor, last time you and I spoke on a rugby field was pre-match ahead of last season's semi-final. No, you were injured. I got hit by Simon Dougal Crosby and kick.
Yes.
Still haven't picked him up on that. Mm. Did you do it on my behalf?
I have. I've gotten him back.
Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, I have.
You suffered a concussion from that, didn't you?
It was awful. I should have claimed, actually.
That was awful.
How disappointing was that to lose that match? I guess, especially after the year you had.
Yeah. It was such a massive day for us as a team. And like you said, the year we had with everything that had gone on, I think we all kind of half believed it was written in the stars for us. And I think the occasion might have got to us a little bit. It was tough watching and viewing the lads, you know, give it everything and just come up short. But really disappointing. We all wanted that magical ending to what was an incredible year on so many kind of emotional levels. But I think, you know, we learned an awful lot from it, and you learn an awful lot more from your defeats than you do your wins. So hopefully this weekend we can kind of put those little lessons into practice and go one more.
What do you think sets you apart and your style of play apart from the other nines? Let's go with Europe first at the moment.
Okay. Composure. I think I'm quite a relaxed individual and laid back, and, you know, I like to chill out and stuff. And I think that works to my benefit at times. People are saying that you're quite composed on the pitch, or, you know, you make a good decision at the right times. And I think that's just in my personality. I'm quite a laid back individual. So I think over the years, learning your trade in a scrum half role, you do have to make quite important decisions at certain times. Playing with a good 10 is obviously a help as well. And I've been lucky enough through my career, I've played with really good 10s. And overall, I think it's probably composure is something that I've worked on. I think right now, after a few years of doing it, there's a few more good days to talk about. But at the start, especially playing with Raj and stuff, you know, I got plenty wrong. Plenty wrong.
I'm sure he told you.
He told me every time. And he made it out. And it was really good for me as a learning curve. He used to always just make fun of my bad decisions. I remember one game against Racing in Paris years ago, and I dummied the kick. We were up by like 2 points, dummied the kick, got turned over, and Ollie Barkley slotted the winner. And I was just like, afterwards, he came into the dressing room, and he was like laughing almost at me. He's like, "You had some brain fart there, didn't you?" And it kind of made it okay straight away. And that definitely helped me deal with bad decisions and not be afraid of going again.
So we finish it then with Mick Galway's quote this week in one of the papers over here, and he said, "We fear no one, we're Munster." It's kind of that. Is that the way you'll be feeling running out on Sunday?
Fear is a weird word. I think we'll definitely respect the players that Racing have and how good a team they are, but I think the amount of players in our squad now that have been through these semi-final defeats, you know, two or three of them now at this stage, and four for some lads. I think, you know, this is a game we're going to have to go and play and attack this game, and not leave anything behind. Last year, we had a few regrets that we didn't play against Saracens. We kind of waited to see what would happen. And, you know, from playing a few big games through the years, you know, if the ones you win are the ones you don't stop playing, the ones that you almost forget about the occasion and you just go after. So I think a lot of lads who have an attachment to this team are feel like that this week, that this is a game we need to go and win, as opposed to a game, you know, we'll show up and we'll try, you know, contain them or whatever. It's something you gotta attack. So in a romantic way, that'll be something in the back of our heads that we gotta go and get this and have no fear.
All right, Ben, let's quickly go over last week's results after a busy round in the Aviva Premiership. Now with the top four spot really, really intensifying. Newcastle 35, Sale 30. What an absolute belter of a game we had on Friday evening.
It was unbelievable. I think Newcastle got out to a 25-0 lead. We thought it was all done and dusted. Bonus point in the bank. And then Sale went in and had a light-hearted conversation with their ever-so-nice director of rugby, Steve Diamond, and came out, and I think they scored 27 unanswered points themselves. Newcastle stealing it back right at the end. But I think it just sort of sums up this Premiership season, really. Just as you think that one team is getting themselves into a secure place. They lose a game that they shouldn't lose, or they something happens and we're back to square one all over again. And certainly that happened this weekend.
And in advance of seeing that Leicester Northampton game, that result where Leicester went down at home to the Saints, which was probably the shock. Outcome of the weekend, considering the form that Saints have been in and the performance they put in.
But I think everyone in Leicester, not everyone perhaps, because they didn't do anything about it, but if there's one team Leicester didn't want to be playing, it was an out-of-form Northampton Saints, because they had nothing to lose in terms of everyone was expecting Leicester to win it with how the results had gone the week before. And a derby day, an East Midlands derby, is never like that. You never can turn up thinking that you're going to win a game. And fair play to Northampton, they played the ideal game.
So obviously they've done a massive favour to Newcastle. You would have expected that Leicester would have managed to force their way into that semi-final spot. But now, at the same time, destiny is still in Leicester's hands.
Well, it is.
That's all you can ask for in the run-in.
For the last four, the last 2 weeks, looking at the last four games, I think we said, because of the way the fixture list has fallen, and actually all those teams are playing each other, we saw Wasps lose up at Sale, which wasn't necessarily expected. We saw Leicester then winning but losing against the Saints, and obviously we've mentioned Newcastle losing a game as well. Because they play each other, we said you need to win three out of your last four. If you win three out of your last four, you're probably going to finish top, finish in the top four, because you're going to beat the other teams and prevent them getting the points getting up there. So I still think that's the same. I still think Leicester now need to win two out of their two games, and that would be two out of three from last week. So,
but what does make it exciting is if you do look at that table, that it's not completely inconceivable for Newcastle, if they lost their remaining two games, to find themselves out of the top six altogether.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
It makes the last 2 weekends so exciting.
Yeah, it does.
Particularly
and
with
actually,
the form that Sale are finding themselves in now, albeit they came off second best in up in Kingston Park, but they were excellent. So if they can bring that over the next couple of weeks, they win. They're going to be right in the hunt, certainly for European qualification, and they'll be pushing hard to get into that top four.
It'd be great for us on BT Sport, because every year all the last round of matches have to, by Premiership rules, kick off at the same time, and so we'll have cameras at all the grounds and we'll be able to follow that story. There'll be less analysis of the match we're actually at, but we'll be able to float in the tries, and it will be stunningly exciting.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's an exciting climax to the season on that front.
Just one other thing. Saracens hammered Bath 41-6. Saracens, we spoke about their early season troubles, or mid-season troubles before. They seem to have put those to rest with their last two performances. Another thrashing.
Where did it go wrong for Bath? What's happened them this season? Well, particularly the latter part of the season.
I don't know. I saw a comment that maybe some of their star players haven't gelled together yet. They've brought a few of them in, but I don't know.
You look at the spine of that team,
fantastic.
Foto Elihi, Falatau, you look at Watson and Joseph, in the back line. It's, there is, in key positions, you do have very impressive players.
I think one area, particularly over the last few weeks, and when your confidence has to be built up over a period of time, and Bath have never, over the last few years, had that period where they can go, actually, we're resilient. We know that when times are bad, we can still eke out games. But I think the biggest problem for them this year, particularly in the last few weeks, has been the injuries they've had in the front row. Because no matter, and particularly if your confidence is a bit low, no matter how well you can put together a phase of play, it can all be undone by a scrum penalty, and you end up having had a fantastic tack.
Or a knock-on.
Attack. Well, exactly.
Because then it there's a sense of the inevitable, which almost has a negative detrimental. Yeah.
And once you get tetchy and once you get nervous, actually, you end up giving away more penalties and hesitating more and giving the other...
The issue,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, it's something that Todd Blackadder is going to have to sort out. Looks like for next year now, but it's a tough dilemma for them.
So Gloucester obviously had another big win as well. Semi-final in the Challenge Cup against Newcastle in King's home. 37-9 win against Quinns. Quinns seem to be in a little bit of a free fall at the moment, but Gloucester taking full advantage of it. And yeah, we talk about the confidence injection you need it in advance of going into the business end of the season. Well, they certainly got that.
Oh, huge. And particularly with that win under tough circumstances for Newcastle, they needed that. I think Johan Ackermann would have actually preferred a more physical hit out and not for everything to go his side's way. I think he would have wanted a closer game than that. But a bonus point win. From a Harlequins perspective, this is going to sound like I'm accusing the players of being lazy. I'm not, but they're already on the beach, aren't they? They just want this season to end. It's not that they're not trying by saying they're already on the beach. They are desperate for this season to end and so that they can rebuild. They know that they're losing their director of rugby at the end of the season. He's going to part company, and they just don't want to be here. They don't want to be playing the last two games. And they've got some brilliant players in that team. Another side that when you look at the spine of the team they've got, they should be doing better. So people will write them off for next year, but with the quality they've got in some of the positions, I don't think you can do that.
And then we looked at Wasps. Have you been impressed with the latter part of their season? Are they in that position where they're just obviously behind the top two, but are they a very dangerous semi-final opponent?
Yeah, Wasps look like they're peaking at the right time. I think that axis of obviously Cipriani got that really nasty head knock at the end of the Sale game, but the fact that that's not been too bad and he's been able to come back into the squad, that hasn't disrupted them. I think getting Jimmy Gopeth back when they did gives them that security that if anything happens to Cipriani, he can slide over, but also that just that presence that he has around the team. I think Cipriani, for me, has been one of the players of the season in the Premiership. He's been absolutely superb, but also his combination with Willie LaRue and Willie LaRue's ability to stand in at first receiver and then give the ball to a Gopeth or a Cipriani to almost get round that hard press and buy him a bit of time to make that decision making. So those three players at the moment will scare any team they face in the
semi-final. They will, but again, like most sides, if you attack their underbelly and up front, and you can starve that quality of player possession, is that half the job?
Yeah,
against
it is.
A Wasps team.
But they've got, they've toughened up in that area, and they have got a back row that most teams would die for. Really, the likes of Thomas Young, you got Haskell involved there. They've found Jack Willis, who for me is the find of the season. So you've still got Thompson in there as well, so they've just got a back row that is an embarrassment of riches, to the extent where Haskell they can't afford to keep Haskell. They can't Thompson's leaving as well because they've got Brad Shields coming in next year. So it's a very, very strong area of Wasps game, and that actually they don't want to get involved in a set piece battle, because with that back row and that back line, they can tear any team apart. Well, that's the Premiership done and dusted. We're going to look at some news. It's going to be a tough news section this, Drico, because there's a lot of controversial, is the wrong word, but highly emotive stories over the last couple of weeks.
Pretty delicate topics as well.
Obviously, the first bit of news is after Stuart Olding and Paddy Jackson were cleared of rape at Belfast Crown Court, the IRFU and Ulster Rugby said they were going to continue with the suspension of their contracts while they did their own investigation. They've now completed that investigation and completely revoked the contracts of the players with immediate effects. They said there was a responsibility and commitment to the core values of the game of respect, inclusivity and integrity. So they're not questioning the verdict against the players.
They're
saying they were innocent.
But
some of the details that came out into the public domain around the court case, specifically
WhatsApp messaging.
Their WhatsApp messaging and their derogatory terms that were used around women. They've decided that they can't have a future in Irish rugby.
To be honest with you, I don't think there's huge surprise in it. Yes, there's certain factions of the Ulster supporters club that I believe have signed a petition and have questioned the decision. For me, it's twofold. Is the decision made from a moral or a commercial perspective? I think you can only, you don't know exactly what the thinking behind what the IRFU have suggested, but I'd say it's probably a little of both. I think there's definitely been pressure come from sponsors. It was well documented in the papers that one of the Ulster sponsors of 20 years was wondering, certainly very interested in what the findings were going to be, suggesting that they might have to reconsider their involvement, just a suggestion. And then obviously that's also fueled a growing concern and unease within the public as to what the outcome was going to be. Well, I must say, first of all, am I surprised that the IRFU have revoked the contracts? Not really. I think those question marks, whether the decision came from a moral or a commercial perspective, I would think that it probably came from a little of both. There was no doubt that there was pressure from sponsors, both at Ulster and Irish international level. I think that pressure has been fueled by public unease and discontent over what the decision was going to be or the findings of the trial. Not so much the outcome, but those detailed WhatsApp messages. And has the game been brought into disrepute off the back of it? You would suggest yes. And as a result, the IRFU have moved swiftly, I think, to also try and end this saga. It's been detrimental to the game. It's been detrimental to the perception of rugby in Ireland. And they're looking to put closure to the whole event. It's a strange one because I heard the Ulster, the other Ulster players read out a statement, and it was pretty non-committal on any front. It was, they wished the players well, said that they'd do well on in anything they tried their hat in life. But it was a very, very brief statement. So everyone is pretty afraid of giving a soundbite to this,
right?
because you're going to alienate some portion or
you're 100% right.
Some fact.
And it's the same in any sport, actually, where someone says controversial now because of the existence of Twitter and everything else. People aren't prepared to talk about subjects because of a fear of saying the wrong thing and getting jumped on. So I think you're absolutely right. I think it's sometimes quite difficult. It was a bit the same with when when we saw Mathieu Bastereau make his comment. There was silence really from a lot of people, apart from just condemning him. And that's one of the problems, isn't it, that actually sometimes people need to speak about things. So if we move now slightly to the other big topic,
just in advance of doing that, I do think the one positive to take from this, and there's very few positives from cases like this, but one positive within Ireland in particular is the whole question around consent and what consent is, and about the need to educate,
exactly,
in particular young boys and young men, and have at least get the conversation out there.
Absolutely.
And there's any suggestions of misogynistic undertones within the game have to be stamped out immediately. So it's brought certain things to the table from a conversation point of view, and that can only be a good thing going forward.
Yeah, and another thing, although people sort of say we shouldn't be, they didn't put it on social media. It was a private WhatsApp messaging group. So now the realization that actually what you say as a bit of banter, that's totally the wrong term, but thinking you're having a bit of a laugh with your mates, that might come back to haunt you one day. You can't put out this public facade of being respectful to women and then amongst each other have this chat.
Exactly.
So I think it's just
there's a
elevating that level of respect
that goes beyond the pitch, to the game.
I alluded to it then, but there's another case that's been very high profile in rugby, and that was Israel Folau's comments. I'm going to be careful how I put this because I don't want to misrepresent what he said. He was asked in an open Q&A Twitter session What were your thoughts again? So it sounded like someone was leading him with a question that they already knew the answer to. What were your thoughts as to what would happen to homosexuals? And he said, words to the effect of, if they don't repent their sins, I believe if they don't repent their sins, they will go to hell. So he wasn't saying, I think they should go to hell, but he was saying
his belief,
a very, very inflammatory belief, which he must have known was going to be, even if that's your religious belief, you can't be shaken out of it.
As Israel Folau has, that that's not going to be, blown up, into the. You have to know if you're Israel Folau, if you're talking particularly anything now from a social network perspective, is global within seconds.
You're publishing comments in it. When you say something on a social media, you're publishing your comments.
And for him, he does have a responsibility within his role as an Australian rugby player.
Yeah.
To the masses, to the fans and supporters out there. To, yes, he might have beliefs, but to be very outspoken about your beliefs when they're going to be, and he's got to know they're going to be received pretty poorly by huge
the other thing
numbers.
Is, there might be some young juveniles, if you like, in Australia who are struggling to come to terms with their sexuality. Mm-hmm. They don't want to tell anyone or vice versa, who might have put Israel Folau a couple of years ago on a pedestal as their biggest hero in the world. And if you're struggling mentally to cope and your biggest hero says what the thoughts that you're having, which are no fault of your own, mean that in his belief you're going to go to hell, it could actually have far-reaching consequences.
Massive negative connotations to it.
Dangerous consequences. Yeah. Absolutely dangerous. He could have just ignored that question. We've all had silly questions come into us when we've been doing various things. We get them when we ask for questions for our guests on Rugby Tonight. You can just ignore them. And even if that is his belief, which I don't agree with myself, he should have ignored that question and kept quiet.
Yeah. And well, listen, not everyone has kept quiet on the issue. Brad Weber, who plays for the Chiefs, condemned Folau's actions on Twitter, saying, kind of sick of us players staying quiet on some of this stuff. I can't stand that I have to play this game that I love with people like Folau who say what he's saying. My cousin and her partner and my auntie and her partner are some of the most kind, caring and loving people I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. To think that I play against someone that says they'll go to hell for being gays disgusts me.
So, yeah. Well, I think that's what a lot of people
general consensus and the outrage around.
And I think the key in that quote is he hasn't said to think that I play against someone that says that believes they'll go to hell for being gay. It's that someone says it, mm-hmm. and comes out and actually says it. So we can't tell everyone what they must believe. That's wrong as well. But just be aware.
It's a nervous time. We talked about the sponsors side of things from the Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olden case. You know, it's a nervous time for Australian rugby. They're not financially in the best spot they've ever been.
No.
The last thing they need on the back of one of their big stars, possibly the biggest name in Australian rugby, to have sponsors looking and questioning whether they want to be involved with individuals that are as outspoken as that.
I think particularly as the cricket storm about cheating and ball tampering has caused such a massive disruption of the sponsorship market in Australia. We've seen Australian cricket lose major sponsors because of that. You could easily see the Wallabies losing major sponsors as well. Some difficult topics we've just been speaking about. One that's probably easier to speak about without offending people, but still a very controversial issue is the World Cup qualifier game between Spain and Belgium in March that was refereed by Romanian Vlad Lordachescu. We haven't heard anything in terms of whether the game's going to be replayed.
To put it into context, Vlad Lordachescu is a Romanian referee.
Yes.
And the other team that was vying for World Cup qualification were Romania.
Yes. And since then, there have been question marks about players from various nations' qualification to play in the international games anyway. But one thing has come out of it, that Rugby Europe has announced that its judicial committee has banned two of the players, Guillaume Rouet for 9 months and Sebastian Rouet for 10 months after physical and verbal abuse of the Romanian referee.
Not insignificant, but...
Vlad. Yeah, Vlad.
Not insignificant bans. You know, you don't see those sort of months being handed out.
No.
Very often. So it's definitely a statement. Is it World Rugby? Sorry, Rugby Europe. I should say. No referee. The core values of the game. It's certainly one of the big ones is respect of the referee, and as soon as there's any leniency in that regard, people will pile in, and it will be in free fall there. So I get it that they wanted to be impactful with handing out such long sentences, but I get the sense that with this decision hasn't it's not gone to bed. Not been put to bed yet about the possible replaying of the game. The Spanish players were absolutely appalled by some of the refereeing decisions.
Well, Spain might struggle to put a team out, actually, because I'd missed that three other Spanish players, Pierre Barter, Lucas Guillaume and Matteo Belli, have been banned for 3.5 months, respectively, for threatening actions and words towards the officials. So I think you're right, that's going to keep going, that story, isn't it? And again, the only positive that can come out of it is that that qualification for some of those nations that are going for World Cup from the lower tier might be set in stone, and we might get some resolution for your future ones. But I think it's going to be very difficult for it to be resolved satisfactorily for this time around.
On to more upbeat news.
Friendly news.
You're a Bristol supporter. And the Bristol Bears, newly promoted Bristol, who have an ever increasingly impressive player roster. Mm-hmm. We're going to see the likes of Charles Pietau joining them from Ulster next season in the Premiership. But news breaking during the week that they're now going to be known as the Bristol Bears, officially from June the 1st. We know that the fans haven't been consulted on the rebrand. Some of the Bristol supporters are absolutely furious. Their fear is that they're going to be called the Yogis or the Boo Boos or the Fuzzies, which from a Bristol perspective, you don't want to be finding yourself back in the top flight and then people taking the mickey out of you.
Do you want to know what I think?
Go on.
I'm totally ambivalent. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
If you're a hard, this isn't directed at you as a Bristol fan. If you're a Bristol fan, they're going to hope you don't too upset by it. They're going to love the fact that you still call them Briss. But it's about going into other markets and a change of brand. Now, any sports fan,
what sort of market? Babies? If the Yogi Bears?
Listen. Leicester Tigers get called the Tiggers by Northampton fans, and Northampton fans get called Northampton Stains by the Leicester fans. Whatever you're called, this happened with Sale Sharks not that long ago, and I remember Big Ferrari, and then 6 months down the line, everyone's forgotten that they used to be just Sale, and they tend to be called Sale whenever you do them on commentary or whenever you speak to their fans, but every now and again, someone will mention the Sharks, and they'll have a mascot of a shark, but I think one of the fears with
it's sports, part of it on the sports fans side of things. Is that a big component to generate excitement and have?
I think there's a community angle.
A mascot running around.
But if you play rugby in Leicester, you get asked if you play for Tigers. You don't get asked if you play for Leicester. And
but that's
if
to you differentiate play football, you, okay, you play from football, the football team,
City,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a massive sporting club, Bristol, and I totally get why they've done it, because there's been research done that you get more salience and reach by having that brand, and it's all about attracting sponsors in, and I don't think it's that big a story. And the fact that you're going to get the mickey taken out of you, they'll find something else to take the mickey out of you if it's not the name that you're doing. And people say, it's disrespecting the history. What history have Bristol got recently? They've been in the Championship, yo-yoing up from the Premiership occasionally. they've got a guy who's the richest man in English rugby as their owner, who is building the Bristol Sporting Club. If he wants to do it, it's all us lot that are going to be crying, cuddling our teddy bears 10 years down the line when they're dominating in Europe. Because, you know,
I totally agree. I think the way to counter it is, starting in September or August as it is, with, two or three victories on the bounce, and people will forget about the Bears. It'll all be about your performance.
I mean, what, Leinster are the Lions, aren't they? I know they're not.
Not anymore. They were the Lions. No,
right,
they're gone. That's gone. God, no, we were
rubbish.
That'd be ridiculous. Lions?
Lions?
They were for a few seasons. Yeah, they're Leinster Rugby. Yeah. But they've got Leo the Lion is Leo the Lion is the
coach. Oh no, it's Leo Cullen. All right, okay. Look, I know it is. Whenever there's change in sport, the current fans hate it. Whether that's moving to a new ground or changing your name or changing a kit or definitely changing your kit colour, I do understand that. But it tends to settle down, and if you're upset by it because you're a Bristol fan, you'll still call them Briss. You'll still enjoy going to the game. It's not really going to affect you. But actually, it might grow some of your supporter base and some of those young kids coming through. Like Falcons, Newcastle Falcons. They didn't used to be Newcastle Falcons. No one up in Newcastle anymore is bothered that they're called Falcons. They quite like it. So I think it'll just blow over. Yeah. Right, just before we preview this week's games, let's hear from Racing 92's Dan Carter describing the Champions Cup as a different animal altogether.
Big game at the weekend, Munster versus Racing. How are preparations going?
Yeah, it's been a good week. Really excited. You just notice the lift. Even though we try to prepare the same each week, you know that there's an extra special game this week just by the lift and the energy, the excitement, the intensity at training. It's just another step up, and that's exactly what you need going into, a playoff game as big as this against a strong Munster side. So preparations are going well.
Have you targeted an area which potentially you could exploit on the weekend?
You know, we were fortunate that we've played Munster on a few occasions over the last couple of years, so we know their style of play. We know where they like to punish you, and basically, it's all about just being clinical, being more accurate than we've been all season, because they're a team that put you under a lot of pressure defensively at the ruck. So it's important we step up in those areas and we're able to to be extremely clinical with the ball and not give them the opportunities that they'll feed off. So they're a class team. They're they've shown what they're capable of over the last couple of years, and they've been a great opposition to us over the last couple of years, put us under a lot of pressure, had some good victories against us. So hopefully we can turn up and put one back on them this weekend, but it's going to take a huge effort.
Do you think playing in Bordeaux gives you any advantage?
Oh, a little bit. Obviously, their supporters are amazing. They tend to travel wherever they're playing, so I'm sure there'll be plenty of Munster supporters, but being the only French team left in this competition, hopefully the French people from even outside of Paris can support us this weekend and try and help us go one step further in this competition.
Racing have so much big game experience over the last couple of years. That 2016 final, what have you learnt from that, and will it help you going into the semis and potentially another opportunity?
Yeah, 2016 was a great season for us. We played a lot of playoff football, made the final stages of this competition, and there's a lot of players that played in that game that'll be playing this weekend, and they would have learnt a lot from that experience. It's another step up from round robin play, even playoff plays. When you're playing in a final, it is just another step up. So hopefully, would have learnt a lot from that loss to a quality Saracens side, and obviously the disappointment that we had last year not making the playoffs adds for a bit of motivation as well. So obviously up against a strong Munster side, and but the motivation, the talent's there. We just have to go out there and apply it now.
Has it been mentioned this week?
No, it hasn't actually. Because it was a couple of seasons ago. And even though there were a lot of players that played that, they would have drawn on that experience, but it's not something that we've gone back and used as motivation this week. There's plenty of other motivation that we can draw upon this week to try and get the winner against Munster. So hopefully this good week's preparation that we'll have will be the foundations of a good result.
Is it important for you to leave Racing with a trophy?
It's why I play the game, is to try and help my teammates be successful and sort of win trophies. And lucky enough throughout my career I've been able to win a few, and I just love that experience. I would love some of the younger players at this club that haven't had that experience before to feel that enjoyment, that satisfaction, the feeling of, you know, reaching your goal and having that success. So, you know, it's a real driving motivation for me to try and help this club be successful, and obviously with moving to Japan next season, it's, you know, my last opportunity to do that. So make sure that I continue to work hard, and any opportunity that I do get, just make sure I give it everything I've got, and, you know, help this team be successful.
You're going to miss it?
I think once I leave, I'll miss it. I'll miss the guys. You know, they're a great bunch. They're like my family here. Obviously, being so far away from New Zealand, not having many friends over here, you draw upon your teammates, and like I said, we are like a family. And so, sort of moving on, you know, definitely, you know, miss the environment that we've got here and my teammates. But, you know, pretty excited about the next challenge. But haven't been thinking too much about that. You know, being in the final stage of this competition, just want to focus on the job that needs to be done here first, and, you know, I can worry about my new challenge and missing this place
in
the future.
That's a summer interview.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's have a quick look and preview this weekend's action. We've got the Challenge Cup first up on Friday. That's our live game from 7 p.m. on BT Sport 3 and 4K UHD. It's Gloucester versus Newcastle from Kingsholm. Who do you fancy there? Newcastle had a big win there, right?
Yeah,
going back in the Premiership back four or five weeks ago.
Yeah, so it's a difficult one to call, because you'd think, well, maybe it's not it for Gloucester, but you'd think that Newcastle might be slightly distracted by their Premiership encounters at the moment, and what they've got on, obviously a short turnaround, a 7-day turnaround for them to play Leicester the following week. Home field advantage is always important, and Gloucester will be rocking on Friday night, but I think Newcastle just have a bit of a swagger at the moment, that confidence, and I think they might do it, but I could just as easily be proven wrong. So don't all write in and complain that I'm biased towards Newcastle, because I'm not. I'm more than happy if Gloucester win.
Yeah, listen, it's one thing we do know. Obviously, we're going to have an English finalist. We do know if, and I'm almost certain that it's going to be the case, that provided the Champions Cup finalist is qualifying in the domestic league, and all four semi-finalists, yeah, the Scarlets and the two Irish provinces and Racing, are all in terrific shape. And I'm almost certain they've already qualified within their domestic leagues. So that means that, or the Challenge Cup finalist, if they haven't qualified through the domestic league, they will qualify for the Champions Cup. So it's quite the carrot, particularly if you're Gloucester, more
exactly,
so than
more
Newcastle.
So for Gloucester, yeah. Yeah, Newcastle. I know you said they could fall out.
It's unlikely, but it's not inconceivable.
But
yeah.
But yeah, it is a big carrot, you're right. I think it's too tight to call, because, you know, when Gloucester get it right, they look unplayable at times, and Newcastle the same. So it will just be, probably, you know, the old cliche of whoever makes less mistakes on the night.
Well, I covered Gloucester in Connacht in the quarterfinal, and it was an absolutely cracking game, lots of tries, and Newcastle like to play, so it should be certainly a very entertaining game. As I said, it's our live game on Friday evening at 7 p.m. Well, that's what we think, but let's hear from Ali Eakin, who previews the game for us with Gloucester head coach Johan Ackermann, who's hoping for a European final at the end of his first season with the club.
Worst case scenario, you have only 3 games left. Best case, you have 6, and it's all condensed into this very short period.
Yeah, and there's so many ifs and buts, you know, and obviously we've got only one go on Friday, and that's it, you know, there's no second chances. But like you say, then if you can get past that hurdle, there's at least that final game is lying there. But the Premiership is so congested, you know, the teams are so well balanced, it can go either way. And first of all, it starts with us. If we don't do our part, the rest will mean nothing.
You mentioned the semi-final of the Challenge Cup. What would a trophy do for your project here?
I mean, any silverware is always good for the club, you know, just to see the club holding silverware, I think it's good for the supporters, for the people that work, for the players, for the, you know, for the it's a long season, and they've put in a lot of work and a lot of sacrifice, and especially here in the UK, you know, we don't get snow in South Africa and the cold winter, so to train in that conditions, you know, it's quite tough. So
for quite long periods actually, yeah, as well.
Yeah, so I mean, so I think it will mean a lot, you know, and it's something that, you know, I say to the players always, don't take any game for granted. You know, you only start missing it once you retire, once you finish off the game. Again, how many of us as players in your playing career, some is very fortunate, they almost lift every trophy that they take part in, but some will have a 10-year career and only win like one or two trophies. So you can't take anything for granted. So obviously it will mean a lot for everyone, yeah, the club involved. But like I said, you know, it's still a big 80 minutes performance before we can worry about that.
Newcastle aside, you know very well, they're playing some terrific rugby of their own. You've won up there, they've won at King's Home. How spicy is it going to be?
Yeah, I think it's almost got a premiership feel to it, more than a European feel. Just the fact that we've played each other the season, and also I think a few weeks ago, and like you've mentioned, they're the one side that came and beaten us. So, you know, it's going to be a massive challenge. They just had a good win again on the weekend, and they're well known to us, and therefore, you know, it's up to us to make sure we're ready to perform, and not to expect that King's Home is going to do it for us, or the fact that, you know, we can just pitch up. So I think that's the biggest challenge for us, to be there mentally and physically and to match what they've got, because they a quality side, you know, with good players, but also they can keep the ball for long periods.
Does it rankle still? Does it irritate and annoy and niggle the players that they're the one team that turned you over at King's Home?
I think if I was a player, I would have, you know. But again, you know, it's something that, you know, I want the players to realize, and you sometimes can't make a game bigger than what it is, and you sometimes can't, you know, focus more on one game than the other game. So I don't want us to get, you know, personal, or we've got a plan in place. We've got, you know, certain things that we have to achieve. You know, good set phase, good line out. And if you don't do that, if it becomes an individual battle or a battle with agendas, then you sometimes lose that focus.
Brian, did you know that Cardiff Blues are playing Poe?
I do. I do. I know it well. Cardiff Blues had a really impressive win against Edinburgh in the quarterfinal. They're actually a team that's hit some form, hit a hot streak over the course of the last couple of months. They've pushed themselves right into contention for automatic qualification in the Pro 14, something that didn't look attainable in the early parts of the year, but they've really turned it around. And obviously they've got Poe who are mixing it in the top 14, right on the cusp of automatic qualification. They're, you know, in one week out another, but Poe have that added incentive that they're not a million miles away from Bilbao, and be a nice little spot, yeah, for their home supporters, just to be able to drive down the road and, you know, give them full voice on the Friday final before the Champions Cup on the Saturday.
And will Cardiff's trip down to South Africa, and the fact that they played in South Africa last Saturday, and all that travelling they've had to do, will that be outweighed by the fact that they won with a 7-try spread over the Southern Kings?
Well, it's much the same as the Munster scenario. You know, I have heard that that trip does takes its toll. It's not an easy round trip. You know, you play 2 weeks down there, but you've got to spin it in your own way, and you've got to, you know, realize too that there is a trophy to be played for after this game. You qualify, you're in a final. You know, sides like Cardiff haven't been in a million finals in recent years, so a huge amount to play for. So I think you've got to convince yourself that it's been a great bonding process for the squad to be able to do those mini tours. We don't get that opportunity with club sides very often anymore. So to go away for 2 weeks and to go and, you know, granted beat a very poor Southern Kings side, but, you know, they still had to get the job done. Back home and a little bit of sun on your back down there, you know, never hurts at this time of the year.
All right, moving on to the Champions Cup. We've already had a bit of a chat about it. Let's get a bit more tactical and look at some of the personnel. It's the third time that Racing and Munster have met this season. They've each won one each. Munster obviously we're thinking that Keith Earls might be returning after a knee injury. How big a boost would that be for them?
Absolutely huge boost. You know, he's been one of the informed players for Ireland this year. I think he's been excellent for Munster. Anytime I've seen them, he's been really good in Europe. I think he's a real leader in their team now, and they've got plenty of leadership throughout that pack with Peter O'Mahony and Stander in there and Murray at nine. I think it's great that they're able to spread it out, and his you know, that combination of himself, you know, Andrew Conway and Simon Zeebo at fullback, when they've been good, they've been really good this season. So he is the sort of player now that you expect when he gets the ball for him to create something or for something to happen. He definitely has X factor, and whether he's going to be 100% fit or not, I think, you know, they'll get him in the team because he, as an opposition winger, I would imagine, I've defended him at 13 at training many, many times and in some games, and he is a disaster to defend against.
Right,
okay. A nightmare to defend against. He's got wicked feet.
Yeah.
It's the distance that his sidestep chop comes, you know, that creates. It's not a little chop step to the left where it's a couple of feet. You know, it's a metre and a half, and all
difference
of a
between an arm and a shoulder.
You're clutching at, yeah, you know, a thin air, rather you're barely getting a hand on, right, rather than getting some form of shot for someone, yeah, else to clean up.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's been in magnificent form. He's really chilled out, mellowed out the last few years. He's been. It's been reported in Ireland that he's gone to get the help of an illusionist in Ireland, a guy called Keith Barry. I don't know what he's...
An illusionist?
Yeah, an illusionist. Yeah, yeah. Quite like a successful illusionist. Yeah.
Interesting.
So he's... Yeah, but I think, you know, life has definitely been put in perspective. He talks a lot, quite openly, about, you know, the major issues, you know, around the world, and how he's able to just treat it as a game, you know, and in the bigger scheme of everything, it's simply only a game, and he's able to bring it back to that, even if it is his career. So I think that's worked wonders for him.
What about where the game's being played in Bordeaux? Because obviously the other semi-final, there was a big furore about it being at the neutral ground of the Aviva for Leinster. It's a fair old trek for Racing as well to get to Bordeaux.
I tell you what is a fair old trek is the distance from the dressing rooms to the pitch. Have you ever played in Bordeaux?
No.
Oh my God, it must be, it feels like a scene in Goodfellas where they walk down into the, you know, to get to their table. Honestly, it takes about 2.5 minutes to walk down.
Right.
So what it might seem insignificant, actually, when you run off the pitch at halftime.
You need to go and visit the stadium the day before and just get...
No, but also, yeah, but also, you so you, oh, right, less, okay, you, less time, less, time less to break time on, to get in there. So,
yeah, wow.
It's difficult to know exactly where this game will be won and lost. There's been very little between the two teams in the games this season. It was a horrible night down in Thomond Park where a Conor Murray try was the difference on a block down kick. And then Machno, you know, kicked a goal with 2 or 3 minutes to go to reclaim the lead in the game in Paris. So these two teams know each other. They've played each other a lot. Obviously, the tragic news, yeah, of Anthony Foley's passing a couple of years ago happened in the team hotel in advance of playing,
yeah,
Racing. So these two teams are well aware of what styles one another play. You mentioned earlier that Racing do have a big pack, but the question is Dan Carter 100% fit? He was in Ireland nursing an injury right after Christmas, intensive treatment. I'm not sure if he's 100% right, but if he is, and when he's humming, I think he's a completely different prospect than still at 36 years of age than Pat Lambie.
And from a Munster perspective, how important is it to stop Nakarawa and his offloading game?
Yeah, well, I think you look at that combination. I know Nakarawa's played a bit of eight as well for them. He's got that versatility, but the grunt of Donegal Ryan playing against his old team in the, yeah, second row, along with that ball playing capabilities of Nakarawa. It's a lovely complement of one another, and yeah, he, you look at offloaders in the competition, and he is light years ahead of everyone else. You know, he can get you. Ordinarily, you might see, you know, two or three offloads in a game is impressive. He can have eight and nine.
Well, I commentated on Leicester against Racing earlier in the season, and the Leicester players knew it was coming. I mean, it was like you know, when you see a like 14-year-old playing with 8-year-olds,
yeah,
he's literally just had the ball above his head and no one could reach it, and he was just biding his time, drawing in four defenders and offloading. So very, very exciting prospect, and you can see him live on Sunday from 2:30 on BT Sport 3. Just looking tactically at the Leinster Scarlets game, that's Saturday's game. Only unbeaten side left in the competition are Leinster. Are they, particularly with it being at the Aviva, too strong for Scarlets?
On the basis of the Saracens' performance, if they play like that again, I think Scarlets will have to have a performance that we haven't maybe seen from them yet. Such was the ascendancy of Leinster, you know, in attack and in defence against the two-time champions. One thing about Scarlets is they did come to Dublin last year and beat Leinster in the RDS,
right,
in the Pro 12 final, as it was, or semi final as it was. Then the following week they came over and beat Munster, thumped Munster in the final in the Aviva. So they certainly will come to Dublin with huge confidence.
Look where they started at the beginning of the year, they struggled against Treviso and losing
to Bath.
Yeah, losing to Bath. They've done amazingly well, but I think some of those games showed us in their pool stages were, if they're still in contention with 60 minutes to go, all the pressure then goes back on Leinster, because they can score two tries very, very quickly. So you'll never, unless you actually put them to bed and kill them off, you're never out of the woods with the Scarlets.
Yeah, you want to be 8 points ahead going into that last, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, because they're capable of two very quick scores. We've seen, you know, a huge number of them have now managed to force their way into the Welsh team off the back of their form. I think you're looking at individuals in terrific form, in the likes of Ken Owens, Tadhg Byrne, who's going to Munster next season. It will be a huge loss for them, but has been, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the best players in Europe this season. And then I just like the balance of that back row. You've got Sean Barkley playing at 8 as well, who's pain in the backside at ruck time, but so savvy, you know, good link player as well. And then the explosiveness of someone like James Davis as well, with Shingler on the blind side. That is just an absolutely mouth-watering back row to play against, you know. No poor back row from Leinster's perspective, but I don't know if they're quite at that calibre.
Right. Well, it's going to be fascinating to find out what a brilliant weekend of European rugby we've got ahead. That's all we've got time for this week. We'll be back next week through the airwaves, delivering you all the week's roundups, news and previews. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review if you've enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.